What's up?
Hey, folks, Jerry here. Welcome to the Pioneers of Insight podcast, a show that explores the wipeouts, crackups, and recoveries of inspiring and influential people. Here you'll get the stories of the quest to find success beyond the struggle and the great leaps of innovation that take us there. People that sound like this.
JLD.
What's up,
Jerry?
What's up, man? What's up, brother?
Thank you so much.
Well, I'm excited to be here, Jerry. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you so much for having me.
Fun today.
Keep telling your story as well.
Yeah, man.
Welcome back.
Welcome back, sir. How are you?
Let me turn the volume up here just a little bit.
All right.
Today, we deep dive the life story of David Wolf, who left a successful music career to take over his cousin's bankrupt bagel business with his brother. All right, strap in, folks, as we head into a story about leaving the familiar for something completely unknown. Enjoy, and I will catch you on the other side.
Things are in a slight, moderate disarray, but not today.
So, welcome, David Wolf, to the Pioneers of Insight podcast. I'm so glad to have you here.
Thank you, Jerry. Thanks for having me. Great to be with you.
So one of the first questions I like to ask my guests is how they see themselves showing up day to day in the world. Now, this is kind of like a third person perspective. Imagine two yous, right? And there's a second you that's looking at the you that's sitting in that chair right now. What would that you be saying about what you do in the world each and every day?
So I'm the observer of David Wolf.
But you're still David Wolf.
But I'm still David Wolf observing myself.
Right, exactly. Yep.
So, and it's present, right, Jerry? So today, the world, David Wolf sees me as essentially a creative guy. That's my core. That's where I come from. I create things. I create businesses. I create business models. I create audio. I create music and have done a lot of that in my past. Today, I'm a warm-hearted, in terms of emotionally how I show up, I think, with people. For the most part, I'm very accepting. I'm flexible. I'm doing what I love to do. And I know we're going to talk a little bit about the PPP, the pointless perpetual pivots, which has become a mantra, not a mantra, a theme. Mm-hmm. But today, I think I see myself as someone who's found a nice level of contentment. I don't know if I like the word nice, but a level of contentment and satisfaction that for a certain period of time was not going on. And we'll talk about how that all occurred. It was somewhat spontaneous. But in terms of, you know, the daily activities, and we talked about this a little bit offline, I am a guy with routine. I started meditating about 6 months ago. I took up transcendental meditation. And that infused a major energetic shift for me. Mm-hmm. Actually a mind blower. And that practice continues, of course. It's part of the routine. I walk every day. And so all of these things are maybe not central to your question, but what's shifted for me lately, and I don't know if the world can see this, the other David can see it, is that the what I'm doing is not quite as important as how I feel in the present moment. Hmm. How I'm feeling in the moment has become more of what I ask myself or how I gauge, let's call it, human satisfaction, you know. So, is that useful?
It is useful. So let me just reflect on what we heard real quick. So I hear at the core of everything that you do, you said, I'm a creative guy. So I hear a creator, but I hear something else. You're saying when I show up to the world, I'm a person that that values my routines and my rituals. I'm a person that values making contact with life. You're talking about meditation and things like that. So for the listeners here, not everybody knows David Wolf, although they should, right? give us the practicalities of what you do day to day. What is it?
So today I'm really a content producer and generator, and I do that for both my own my own platform, which is called Small Biz America.
Small Biz America.
The brain.
And I, but the core business that I'm involved with now, which is a lot of who I'm about, I suppose, is the work I do for others and the work I do helping them amplify their voices through podcasting and video. You know, I have a history of in the music production business. So for many years, I was asked to create musical pieces for films, for radio and television commercials, for children's programming. And so it was organizationally focused. I would go to an ad agency, they'd show me the film, and I would do a project and get paid. Today, I've transferred those skills into a business model where I really am focused now on helping others amplify their voices through these new mediums, relatively new mediums. 10 or so years old, podcasting and video, and most of it's podcasting. So it really carries this audio production thing I've done for many years into a business that I can, I make a good living. And most of all, you know, I made a decision that I wanted to work with people I like to work with on projects that are meaningful and doing work that's, and with people that I like. Did I say that already? So people I like, projects that I enjoy. And, oh, and the third is, you know, generate enough revenue to be content. And if there's more, there's more. But that's where I am today.
So I hear a couple things that's showing up already with you. We heard about how David sees himself now, right? Mm-hmm. There's the creator that's slowing down to make real contact with life. I'm hearing what you do in terms of the practicalities of what you do. You're a media and content creator, but there's a teacher suddenly that's showing up in your life, meaning that the shift has gone to how can I help others? So let me ask you a question, because I typically hear this with people in their success and happiness journey, is that when somebody makes a transition to take on a new role, there's often some sort of big life event that's playing in the background. You know, a lot of times, you know, in the background could be like a transition in terms of a career disaster, or could be a relationship issue. It could be whatever, but this forces us to rethink who and what we are. Did you find that was part of the case with you in terms of making this big transition from just content creator for other people to creator to helping others along their path and teaching what you know?
Yeah, this teaching component, it's very insightful. So there was a period of time, and we're going to move into this pivot period that I call it, the blue period or whatever you like. I had a good successful run in the music business. I was making more money than I understood what it meant. And that's part of my story as well.
Do you mind sharing what you were doing in the music industry?
Absolutely. So I was what they used to call a jingle guy, right? I started in Chicago as a music, I was a player, and then moved into film scoring, studied orchestration, ear training, all the things that go with being a music composer, and found my way into the commercial music business. So I would, my clients were advertising agencies. Working on projects for Southwest Airlines, Frito-Lay, Chuck E. Cheese restaurants, McDonald's Regional.
Do you have a favorite? Do you have a favorite jingle?
Well, it's interesting because the time I entered the business, the focus had moved away from singing songs about products and their attributes to more soundscapey. So yeah. I was more involved with instrumental music, and that's always been for me. I mean, I did a lot of songwriting. In fact, the foundation of the guy that mentored me, or the foundation of the experience of being mentored by Dick Marks, who was one of the founder, kind of one of the major guys during the roaring 50s and 60s when radio moved into television and this advertising, you know, the golden years and the, you know, the Mad Men period. Dick was entering his 60s when I joined him at age 21. And a lot of it was songwriting. It was the basics of how do you sing about a product, which was, you know, grounded in this history of advertising. But for me, I was always more interested in harmony and melody and orchestration. And I'm
a
complex
real musician in you. Yeah.
Well, yeah, exactly. I was a complex thinker, and I sort of almost, no, I wouldn't say flaunted it, but this is the zone that I like to live in. I like, if I was writing a tune for children, let's say, what was interesting for me, and maybe for the musicians that were in the studio with me, was the chord changes I would choose, or the harmonic treatment of a very simple melody to keep it interesting for myself. Mm-hmm. So there's, you know, with artists, and you know this, you're an artist yourself, there's always we have to like the work we're doing. It can't be only for function. There are guys out there do the music business, commercial music business, to do that. I'm not one of those guys. So there's always this integration of pleasing myself and also satisfying the marketing problem for the client, which is what they paid me to do.
Okay. Let's rewind a little bit.
Yeah.
So there you are, you're a creator, but you're a creator in a box, meaning you're doing a lot of things for other people.
Exactly.
I hear this in what you're saying about your identity at that period, because we're going into this blue period of your pivots, that there's a part of you that needs to be satisfied. I hear a genuine artist in you. So what is this transition do you think you had to make, that where you transitioned from working just simply for other people to going, I want to be able to support people on their journey? What was going on in the background? What shifted for you? What was the life events?
So I'm approaching 40. I've made a lot of money, you know, relatively, several hundred thousand in savings at that point. And then now what things started to happen for me as I turned 40, my kids were at that time, probably around 10, 8 and 10, I think. I have two boys that are now in their nearly 30, but at the time,
married,
I'm 57. One is married recently and the other is, has a year relationship. So I don't know if that's long-term, but
I met you, David, you were married at the time.
Oh yes. You're asking about me. Yeah. I've been married 33 years now and, to the same woman. And, yes, I was married at the time and we were living in Dallas and Phyllis, who she co-ran the business with me. So we noticed, well, a couple things happened. One is there was she had a desire to move to Santa Fe, New Mexico. We have her sister lived there with her family at the time, still does. And, there wasn't really a rational reason. It's just like, you know, and in the Yiddish, we call the spilkies. She had spilkies. And for me, I kind of was not someone who was driving our personal decisions. I was very commanding in the studio, but at home, there was this sort of paradox. I was subservient to her desires to do this or to do that. And often it involved spending some money. And, you know, she and I have talked extensively about this. I don't have any problem just processing it out loud for our audience because I think it's useful to those listening. Mm-hmm. But this was one of the dynamics of our relationship that we now understand, is that I was not forceful or not, neither of us were really looking at a life plan. We had it in the very early stage, but somewhere along the line, as money accumulated, we thought it would never end. I'm sure many can relate to this. And there was this feeling of sort of, we sort of abandoned plans. And then I hit 40 and the business is starting to deteriorate a little bit. Actually, before it started to deteriorate, we moved to Santa Fe. I sort of jumped a step. So not quite 40. I was in my mid 30s, about 36. Maybe you're even younger, 32. We moved to Santa Fe and we ride this wave of business for a while. We have clients flying out to work with me, and we had a home studio with a home with a studio that we had built in Santa Fe, New Mexico, a beautiful, beautiful love site. But what I had done is I extracted our business and myself from the source of our business. Mm-hmm. Dallas is, you know, not the major market, but it was the third or fourth market. And so I was competing with the Los Angeles companies and New York companies. And it took me kind of out of the fold. And then some competitors came in. So this is more sort of a business context of it all. And so there was a wave that we rode for a while because I had some constant clients that were not project oriented. They were more longer durable clients. But eventually we realized that the moving to Santa Fe extracted ourselves from our source. And we subsequently moved back to Dallas. And during those two or three years, the business began to really deteriorate. I was tired of doing creative on demand, which is my term for this. And I was getting to be older, which in that advertising music business you turn 40, you're people making those decisions about who's going to do the music for our next hot commercial. You know, they're in their 20s, mid-20s, maybe they're 30. So there was a generational divide starting to happen, or an age divide. At least that was my perception of it. I was just burnout. I was just tired of it. I had been spending, you know, I mean, we were doing 3, 4, 5 sessions a week during a certain period. And so I was just, you know, fatigued. So we would take these long walks around the lake, and what are we going to do? The phone rings. My brother Bob calls, and the phrase is, do you want to make bagels? And he said, look, Cousin Henry went bankrupt, and he's leaving the business. The doors are locked. At peak, doing about $3.2 million.
So you go ahead, you take the leap?
Yeah.
All right, hold on. I got to slow you down.
It's quite a bit here.
No, it's great. So I want to make sure that we're really helping the listener understand.
Yeah,
following the track. You're going through. So creator, very successful at what you did, in demand, right? Suddenly there's this transition in terms of where your business is coming from. You make a leap, not just yourself in terms of professionally, your family's making a leap.
Yes.
You're looking at your identity as a 40-year-old man at the same time, right? You're going, all right, what do I do here?
I love that.
There's something about David Wolf, and this is where we're going to get to your superpower a little bit, that can have a skill set and a history of success in a certain industry that at a critical transition point like this, at a who am I stage, that your eyes are open to an opportunity to invest in a bagel company going bankrupt, right? Or to invest in an opportunity. Let the viewer, the listeners into this just a little bit. David, what is it about you that even seemed like a good idea at a considerable crisis moment, right? It's not you're falling off a cliff moment, but there's a major shift going on in your life and you're able to see the opportunity.
Well, there was a desire. I think what appealed to me about the raw opportunity were a couple of different things. And one proved to be maybe constructive and not so constructive. I'll let listeners and you be a judge of these things. My brother was really having some struggles in his own life. And he called me with an objective to not only bring me in, but also, you know, really become an owner in this business. And I responded to him because I understand that unlike me, he had struggled quite a bit financially and personally trying to sort out who he is, what he should be doing and how to make a living, you know, just basic stuff, just kind of wandering. And there was an aimlessness about his life path. And I wanted
brother
to show
your younger brother,
a younger brother, 2.5 years younger. There's only the two of us. So you get the dynamics of this. Yep. So yep. I'm the successful guy. There was polarity in that and the way we sort of conditioned.
You're on the hero's journey.
His children, you got it, you got it. So I wanted to kind of, I wouldn't say that I felt guilty about any of this. I think I genuinely wanted to see if I could do a project with him that would help him, give him a lift in his life path, create an opportunity that was durable in a way that the creative on demand was not. In other words, we're going to make basically edible widgets. We're going to sell them to Sysco Food Service, US Foods, Shamrock, and all the rest. Whole Foods, Wild Oats, when they were still around. I mean, this was a real business. And it was a chance for me also to learn how to, rather than reading musical scores, now to learn something new. Learn about how to read financial statements, for example. Learn how to raise capital. I wanted to validate myself in business a bit.
All right. So let me make sure I'm making contact with what you're saying here.
All right.
So I hear two things operating. One, there's a family component. There's an older brother that's looking at a younger brother and going, there's really an opportunity to support here. Number two, there is the adventurer. We had a conversation yesterday where I heard this start to show up. You have a tendency when I was talking to you of looking at your past and kind of finding ways to detract from the journey that you were on or belittle the journey a little bit in the way that you're phrasing it. And I heard a man that has a great sense of adventure. When there's an opportunity that comes up, it's not just the opportunity. It's, boy, what can I learn? And I heard you start to talk about that in this transition that you're talking about here. It's not just simply being able to make emotional contact and support your brother in a moment where he's struggling. You're looking at this as, hey, here's a window to an opportunity to learn more things and to take a new adventure. Does that sound right? Because I don't want to put words in your
No, I think you're extrapolating it beautifully. You're brilliant. Your listening capacity is amazing, actually, because you know how this goes. You know, for at least for me, I kind of enter this unconscious state as I talk to you and tell these stories, and I hear things coming up, and I don't really take a lot of time to sort of reflect. So I really appreciate this these pauses and sort of reflection that you do. I mean, it was a very bold leap, and people would respond. Remember the external input, which I really cared could care less about. I thought it was kind of cool, actually. Oh, you went from music to bagels? What is that? You know, and we splashed into town. The brand was well known. You know, Albuquerque's a city of about 750,000 people at the time, probably less at that time. This was just to put a timestamp on it. It was 2000 exactly. I turned 40 in 2000. I was born in late 59. So, you know, 2000 was shortly before 9/11, of course, and I remember being in my office to timestamp it, you know, in 2001, a year into this business, and seeing it on the little TV with the rabbit ears, which is what we had at the time, the two buildings collapsing. But that was a year later. In 2000, we splashed into town. The news picked me up. I did a lot of interviews here with the local business news and the press. And it was kind of like being a hero, resurrecting this brand that was pretty well known. They had 7 retail stores, which had all collapsed by the time I got there. So we really focused on retail. Mm-hmm. But I learned a lot. I mean, we connected with, I raised about $1 million in capital over the 8 or 9 years I ran the company. The struggles came in. The family piece was very challenging. We had 2 wives and 2 brothers working together. It's very common for the wives not to do so well in that environment. She's considerably younger than my wife. My brother and I are only about 2.5 years apart.
This is a therapist in me. Talk direct. So your wife's weren't getting along is what you're trying to say? A little bit?
Absolutely. No. Yeah. The wives were.
And now a quick word from our sponsor. Josh is the founder of Weevil Outdoor Supply Company. He loves creating killer apparel for outdoor people. But his job, he says, that's about putting out fires daily. Here's what he called a typical day.
So we created a new jersey. I built it. It's a ride jersey. It minimalizes neck rub. It's a great jersey.
But there was a catch.
We decided to move our production for all of our t-shirts to a new factory.
And so they do, and they put in some new orders.
It's approved. I shoot the photos in the studio when the jerseys arrive. We pump it up on Instagram. Deliver the jerseys. They're loving it.
Until
Matt calls me 4 or 5 times and I know something's wrong.
Matt's the head of sales.
He's like,
the logo's upside down. Not upside down, it's like inverted.
And we're like, oh my God, all the patches are on upside down. How did they not see that?
Weevil, get off the couch and go outside. To check out killer hats, shirts, jerseys, and apparel, visit weeviloutdoor.com.
So your wives weren't getting along is what you're trying to say?
Absolutely. No. Yeah. The wives were, there were various issues. They weren't getting along. You know, we could unpack that more if you like, if it's useful to the show. So there was this, and there was this, the desire for my brother to be an owner financially in a business where he had not actually made an investment. So one of the big business lessons I learned here was that it's very hard to reverse engineer a partner, in whether they're family or not, into a business environment or a business partnership as an equity partner when they don't actually contribute capital. That's a very strenuous and difficult thing to engineer, but our accountants actually figured out a way to do it. And so we spent a lot of money kind of creating this model so that he would eventually have equity. I learned a ton about the capital formation process. And
sounds like it. Take me to the day that represents the low point, because there's a number of things that I hear that could be very helpful for people on the success and happiness journey. So we have this crossroads of a number of things going on. We have family dynamics, right? We have conflict. We have a huge leap that you're taking as an adventurer. That's your superpower. It sounds like it gets you in a bit of a tangle, meaning you have the skill set to take these things on. It sounds like you're an unbelievably resourceful learner to learn on the fly like that. Mm-hmm. You have these expectations that are underlying your relationships. Mm-hmm. Hey, by the way, you're rescuing my business, but I want to be the business owner. And I also hear something that hasn't been expressed yet. you stuffed a part of yourself, which was there's this creative creator in you that's kind of like it being parked somewhere in the background while you're really stepping into this business self. So take me to a day that represents the low point for you, because that sounds like a lot to have to juggle. Was there a moment where you were just like,
Absolutely. So there probably were a few moments, but if I could just, for the sake of the story and benefiting listeners, consolidate it into a, let's call it a single sort of idea. In that business, first of all, it's a small business, even though we're generating $3.2 million and some amount is either lost or gained at the bottom of the page on the P&L. It's a very thin staff. So, you know, here I want to be the, you know, another Yiddish word, the mocker, you know, I want to have this business and we've got 30 employees, but if the baker doesn't show up, guess who's going to bake? If the driver doesn't show up, guess who's going to drive? So I found myself literally driving a truck up to Santa Fe from Albuquerque on several occasions, waking up at ridiculous hours in the morning, 3:30 in the morning, to drive the deliveries to our Whole Foods, our Wild Oats, the couple of assortment of cafes. And there was this absolute, you know, sort of on one hand, a justifying, okay, well, this is what it takes to do a small business. And on the other side, what the hell am I doing?
So you're at a bread truck at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Copy that.
When you've been a musician that's wildly, you know, done well for himself in life, you made it. Right. You listened to the adventurer, you stepped into it, but I hear that you're in a place where you're like, what do I do here?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
right. So let me catch the listener up. We heard about how you see yourself. You see yourself as a creator that's taken a big leap. The leap that you've taken recently has been the move from strictly creator to I'm going to help other people on their journey to be creators, right? So there's a bit of a teacher, and that's become part of the business of what you do.
Yes.
We heard your low point. The low point came, thankfully, to the benefit of, well, let's just say to the strengths and the challenges of your superpower, which was the adventurer. You got yourself into a bakery business and found yourself into some conflicts and emotional dynamics that were a little bit difficult, but also you found yourself in having to take some risks as a small businessman were pretty uncomfortable for you. And I teased out, there's still a part of yourself that was parked, and that's the creator part. So take us out of that, because right now I'm looking at David Wolf, who's the content creator again, and he's helping others on their journey as content creators. Where did that transition come in?
A great question. So in the timeline, I think it'll make some sense as I tell the story. So as the business, you know, went through its cycle of arc of my involvement, I began to open up a microphone, I'll say it that way, and I created a short format. You know, I had to do something creative. And what struck me about this experience was how difficult it is to do small business, Mm-hmm. So I wanted to capture it. Somehow I unconsciously or consciously created this little series called Small Biz America, which basically involved interviewing business owners from all over locally and nationally.
Were you like moonlighting while you were doing your business?
Yeah, yeah. I was doing that. And there were a couple little veers in here as well that I'll mention briefly. I went and got my Series 766 and thought maybe I want to be a financial advisor. This was what I call the swatting at flies now, because I've got a financial issue I've got to solve. So, you know, I was kind of, you know, let me try to chase money, chase transactions. But I started producing this series. I had a small, the remnants of my then, what was once a larger studio, a small studio, like one that you and I use today in our homes. And began interviewing people, really without understanding what the business model was, but I just felt like I needed to start understanding the mind of an entrepreneur. So I created a couple of series, the Small Biz Spotlights, the Small Biz America, sort of the broader scope, and then the short form feature that was about 90 seconds that ended up being syndicated in about 75 markets through a boutique syndicator out of Greenwich, Connecticut at the time, called Business Talk Radio Network. And I loved that. I just loved the interview. I loved the editing of the interviews. I loved the packaging of it. I love the whole idea. It sort of validated or revalidated my involvement in media, which was very satisfying. And it also explored this whole area that now I had had some experience with, the struggles and the plight of entrepreneurs that want to go into a small business. So it kind of wrapped together all these things very nicely and started podcasting. Eventually it moved to. So this was the swing. The pivot was, and ultimately my brother took over this business. I'd love to be able to say I sold it to him, but what actually happened was is he just took it over because I was, you know.
What was the feeling when you handed it over?
Well, it was precipitated actually 2 years prior by him telling me that we were exploring expanding into Denver for whatever reasons and to expand our revenue base. And I had an investor that ran a very, very large multi-billion dollar mortgage company involved. And he was a great, great partner. I learned a ton from him. And we had begin to devise a way to include my brother more on the equity side, understanding that he was still not satisfied. And I had this desire to kind of create some equivocation around this as the rescuer. And just as we had been starting to engineer that formula, my brother dropped a bomb and said he's leaving the business and he's moving his family to Denver and they're going to start their own bagel company in Denver. You can only imagine, you know, and I really talk about stuffing. So at the time, I mean, I really almost...
Wait. Because now I have to slow this down. I wasn't expecting you to go there. This is important because this, we were talking about earlier in the interview, often what precedes a leap to your authentic or core identity is these real crises. Here you are, you step into that relationship. There's two aspects that were working with you. The adventurer was really leading, but like you said, you also named it the rescuer. So the rescuer is confronted with kind of an abandonment in that moment. Your brother turns to you and is like, nah, I'm gonna do this on my own. And here you are, stepped in to make a considerable leap in your own life. What was the feeling and how did you make sense of that? And how did that inform the next step where you went back, you home to your media content creator
self? Yeah. So yeah, this is probably more than I realize in terms of the emotional impact. And I may not still have digested it all, but because I'm a harmonic seeking person is expressed in my music. I don't seek conflict. So you could call it that I stuffed it. You could call it that I was okay with it. I understood why he needed to do this, but it was still, you know, it sucked. I mean, you know, I hear, but there was a part of me that was relieved too, because the conflict went away, you know, the wives fighting. By this time, my wife was working outside the business. She understood that this was not sustainable and it took me time to catch up to her. But ultimately this all led to a bankruptcy for us, a personal seven. Which we took about 9 years ago. Thank God it's 9 years ago, because that's not a fun process. Mm-hmm. And during that first 7 years, it's like carrying around a ball and chain financially. Mm-hmm. And so the brother leaving was a combination of relief, the chapter was ending, and I was angry for a while. But I tend to make it okay in terms of saying it like this. I learned a ton about a lot of stuff. And I can't go back. I can't live and rewind. So
sometimes when I do these interviews, I find that people will make this transition to an occupation or a career or a core identity when these critical moments happen. And part of that is a healing process, right? To go back to where you really feel true connection in terms of your purpose and your passions. So I hear a person that moved through that with a lot of grace, took some pretty big risks for himself to get back to a place where you can find meaning and purpose. What do you see now as your vision for yourself as you move forward?
Well, I'm always fascinated by what I'll call architecture, and it extends into the business model thing, you know, and this is part of what appealed to me about making edible widgets in the bagel business. Systems. I really appreciate systems, and I understand what I've learned from so many, you know, 100,000, maybe 1,000 interviews, several hundred or 1,000 interviews around with business gurus and experts and so forth, that You can have a practice, which is like being a therapist or being a musician or being a guy that produces podcasts, project oriented. You know, even my music business was a project business. It wasn't really a business. It was a practice that where you're paid and you're exchanging time for money. There's no scale or level leverageability in that. So as I, you know, looking at 60, a couple of years out in front of me, I'm now looking at keeping the one-on-one engagement with those that I produce content with and for, but also creating a systematic approach to helping amplify the content, either whether I'm producing it or not. So I'm now beginning to map out a vision to take kind of an older technology called streaming radio and provide a platform where podcasters and content creators that produce audio can find new audiences in a systematic way that's not, that complements the on-demand, which is where they're already distributing. So in on-demand, it's lean-in listening. Someone has to go and actually want to listen. They have to subscribe. They have to download. You know, it's an active part on the listener. With internet radio, much like terrestrial radio, which is radio with an antenna, for it's not from another planet. It's radio with an antenna. You know, you click on a streaming player that can be on a website or a link that can be posted somewhere, and the show is already going on. So what we're doing is we're engineering a system where we help podcasters find new audiences and also refresh their old content along with the new. So just to back up a little bit, not to get too far into the weeds on the business model itself, it's side by side. I continue producing, trading time for money, time and materials for money, projects, inflows of cash in a creative way, and then also creating niche radio stations that are curated with podcasters that want to work with us, where their shows are rotated in a playlist routinely every week. And so we're selling basically, in theory, unlimited inventory, which is very, as a business guy, that's very appealing to me, you know, this idea of the systematic approach to creating a business that it's still a box where I can create stuff, but you know, in the absence of having a large retirement, I have to think in terms of generating durable streams of cash flow.
So now there's the creator in you that gets to exercise the creative self, but there's the part of you that really developed a skill set as an entrepreneur that knows how to scale something. So now you brought that to your present. All right. So that takes a lot out of a person. And for those of us who are middle-aged and older, we know that energy and managing energy can be a challenge all of its own. So let me ask you about that. What you're talking about doing right now in your life is demanding. How do you maintain the energy to do that? Do you have habits, rituals, and things that you find are absolutely essential to maintain not just your own health, but your relationship health, your health as a businessman as well?
A series of events led me to transcendental meditation. And I started practicing, this is 20 minutes twice a day. And it's a system for resting the mind, finding stillness in our minds, which is really where the mind wants to be naturally. There's this very subtle thought, the beginning of a thought. The ocean metaphor is the one they use in training, where you have all this active life stuff happening at the top where the waves are moving and shaking and the wind is blowing and all that stuff. And then as you transcend through thought to the subtler aspects of thought, you find what you might ultimately call a bliss, stillness or bliss consciousness. And so by practicing and beginning to do this about 6 months ago, not quite, I instantly found my relationships improved and continue to. It's a process, right? It's not a destination. A lot of things shifted, and it happened just as the time I was rebuilding what this business net I'm now describing to you moments ago. So, and a lot of good things started to happen, even silly things like I'd be walking and a gate would open for me, just, you know, an automatic gate, which is open as I'm walking. I actually laughed out loud. It was like, really? So the universe has begun to line up and conspire in ways for my success, and I'm observing it. And my wife, who does not meditate, has noticed a shift, and this continues. The other thing I do routinely is I'll meditate in the morning and in the afternoon, but in the mornings I'll also walk a minimum of 2.5 miles a day. And I just do this walking thing. I'm not doing a lot of heavy working out. I do have a bike, but the combination of the meditation and the active walking has been really, really helpful. And my energy is just great right now. It's, I mean, I use a little caffeine, but you know, other than that, I mean, I'm very happy with the energetic part of your question there.
Mm-hmm. So meditation.
Medication.
Was that a slip? I don't know. Yeah. No, meditation has been a critical component of what you consider this transition that you made in your success journey. All right.
Yes.
So we got it. All right. So let me take you to what I consider the power question. To doozy, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. I don't doubt it, David Wolf. Let's say that a miracle has happened on planet Earth in terms of technology that allows everybody to extend their lives by 100 years. Right?
Wow.
So here you are 40 years from now. You're sitting in your studio, you're creating content. Maybe you've taken a moment to do transcendental meditation and there's a knock on the door. And it's your grandchildren's children come to you. There's two of them. And one of them, let's say they're 5 or 6 years old, turns and says, "Great grandfather, I'm hearing a lot about success and what that means, and I have no idea what success is. What would you tell them is the meaning of success?"
Do what you love to do and love everything you do. Those two things in tandem. So we all hear about follow your passion and that success means we're doing what we like to do. But success also can mean, this really has come out of my practice as a meditator, not only choosing things that we like to do, which is follow our passion, but on the other side of that spectrum is everything we do, we should love. Every breath we take, we should love. And so it's both of those things coexisting. And if you can find that intersection where picking up this glass, I can do this. And one of the things I think about, that we have a lot of family and friends that we've lost over the years. We all have it. The times I think about them are the times when the sun hits my face. Simple things. When I'm brushing my teeth, when I can know I can lift this glass. It all gets back to being conscious. So anyway, this enhanced level of consciousness about loving everything we do, that's true freedom. Loving everything we do. It's also true that doing what you love is powerful, but loving what you do is also so.
That was a beautiful clarification. Thank you so much. So beautiful. David Wolf, I want to thank you for taking time out of your schedule to share not just an interview, but parts of your story. Mm. It was truly a pleasure to have you here.
Thanks so much for having me, Jerry. Great to be here.
All right, folks, that's a wrap. If you enjoyed the episode, please leave a review on whatever platform you're listening to. This just helps put it in the hands of the people likely to get something out of it. If you'd like to dig a little deeper and see what we got cooking here at TUI Media, you can visit our website at tuimedia.com. Wishing you grace to fill your sails today. Stay great in the meantime, and I'll see you on the next Pioneers of Insight.
Done. The phone rings. My brother Bob calls, and the phrase is, "Do you want to make bagels?"